you sweat, you're an athlete. That's the ethos of Strava, the booming social network for athletes used by more than 40 million people in 195 countries, designed by two longtime friends and athletes. Mark Ganey and Michael Horvath first met while competing for the Harvard rowing team. Michael was team captain, and Mark had been a high-level cross-country runner, but turned to rowing after stress fractures cut short his collegiate running career. After university, when Mark was working in Silicon Valley and Michael took a professorship at Stanford, the two began talking about how they could create a virtual locker room for athletes to share tips and conversation about training. While they did create a product, it actually solved another totally different problem in the early days of the World Wide Web. Khanna Communications became the solution for many companies in dealing with customer service email. In the year 2000, Mark and Michael's business hit a valuation of $10 billion. Fast forward to 2009 when they set up Strava, which is Swedish for to strive. The product was initially used by mainly cyclists who are famously obsessed with GPS, maps, and any and all data they can get their hands on. Now 10 years later, and more than 2 billion activities have been logged on the app, with 1 billion of those being tracked in the last 18 months alone. The app is used by runners, swimmers, yogis, hikers, and all sorts of athletes, from weekend warriors to professionals. More than half of the peloton in the Tour de France taking place right now will upload their daily rides to Strava, and the platform has been used to post Olympic gold medal efforts, world records, and was even used by renowned alpinists Corey Richards and Adrian Ballinger when they climbed Mount Everest without the help of oxygen. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bache. For today's program, I sat down with Mark at Midori House in London, which is in fact Strava's most popular city, to hear about his journey. The company has brought on a new CEO, but Mark remains chairman today, and as a serial entrepreneur and former venture capital executive, does lend his advice on various boards and projects from his home in California. We began by talking about Mark's upbringing and his love of sport and the outdoors.
So there's two major parts of my upbringing. You're right. I'm born in Colorado, early years there. So you got the Rockies and so forth. I actually moved at a young age, though, to a place called Reno, Nevada. Similar. It's nestled in the Sierra Nevadas, big mountain range in the western United States. Really known for gaming and casinos and divorces and things like that. But if you live there, you just have this amazing affection for the outdoors. You have Lake Tahoe. You have ski resorts. So I found myself playing outdoors. I was either riding bikes or skiing.
And it was cross country that you really got into eventually, isn't it? Was it at Harvard where you were doing cross country, or was it even before that?
No, it was before. So I was very fortunate. I went to Reno High School, public school there, and just happened to join a great team, you know, winning state championships and things like that. So I was in love with running as a high schooler. And that's actually what got me up to Harvard. I was recruited out there as a runner. But then in a fateful turn of events, was introduced to the crew coaches. And so I actually never ran for the Harvard team. By the time everything happened, I was a rower through college.
And was that because of a stress fracture, I understand, that maybe stopped you from running a bit?
That's right. I went out for my freshman year with a set of injuries, stress fractures. So that kind of kept me out my freshman year. And then it was a very random set of events where I ended up in the boathouse one day and met the coaches. And they're pretty good at recruiting on campus. And I think they took a look at my height and my long limbs and heard I had a pretty good set of lungs. And so they conned me into making the switch.
So a bit of a blessing in disguise, perhaps. Is that where you met Michael Horvath? He'd go on to become the co-founder of Strava with you years later. But is that where you guys met?
That's right. We did. Yeah. He was 2 years ahead of me. He was captain of the team the year that I joined. And it was a friendship that was forged early. He was a great mentor at that time, or at least somebody who took me under his wing and taught me a lot about rowing. And after he graduated, we just stayed friends and was fortunate to have him join me on the West Coast a few years later.
And was it at Harvard where sort of the early ideas of what a Strava could be was born, or was that just years later when you guys were thinking back about your time on the row team?
So what happened? I don't think we were thinking about a business while we were there, but what did happen was we graduated, and this amazing experience that we had had for 3 or 4 years, it disappeared. It was truly a void in my life to not be in a competitive situation, to be on a team. I always refer to sort of that esprit de corps, the camaraderie, even the trash talking, just everything that comes with participating on a team. It was built in and perfect. inside that boathouse. So to graduate and lose that was something that both Michael and I were cognizant of. We were always talking about, now where do we find that? Hmm. And he and I started doing some marathons together. We did a marathon in, I think it was 91. I graduated in 1990. In 91, we did a marathon together in Chicago. But it was early 1995 when I realized I wanted to go start a company, and I was trying to con him into joining me, that we started to play with this idea of, you know, could we recreate that boathouse experience? Mm. You know, what about this internet thing? So you're right. As early as 1995, we were at least contemplating the idea. It took us a little while to finally get it off the ground, but we're happy we did.
After you graduated, you did a number of things and have been involved in venture capital and things. But tell me about the company you eventually founded, Kana, I think it's called.
So we did, yeah. So as I mentioned, we had this business plan in 95. It was originally Kana Sports, and we were trying to create this virtual locker room. We were naive but objective entrepreneurs. So what we realized was this virtual locker room might have satisfied our needs, but we couldn't figure out a business. And as luck would have it, we were introduced to a different situation where companies were really struggling with the volume of customer email that was coming in. This is the early days of the internet. So companies like Yahoo and eBay and even a Ford Motor Company or a Chase Manhattan Bank, if they were launching an internet business, they were unprepared for things like just the sheer volume of email. We built that company. We found some developers who could help us solve customer email and help manage that problem. And we were in the right place at the right time. Took that from two guys and a dog. Connor was named after my dog at the time. And we took that from us to about 1,200 people, took it public in 1999. You know, just sort of had that great ride that everybody talks about, 4 years of growing a business from nothing to something we could take pride in. And we caught the bug. You know, at that point, we knew we were entrepreneurs.
Did you see that as a successful venture? Obviously, you did quite well when you left that company, but you sort of didn't go to exactly where you wanted to with I guess, the virtual locker room, as you said. But I guess it was a good learning curve anyways.
I would take it as lots of great lessons, lots of positives. So the idea of again, being an entrepreneur and just the fun of building a team and startups, Kana was perfect. To have the success that we had as a business, to, you know, we were generating hundreds of millions in revenue. We were a public company with a large market cap, you know, good return for our investors. So in many ways, we would call it a success. We also faced the challenges. I mean, when there was a nuclear winter in Silicon Valley in 2000, 2001, when the markets collapsed. And, you know, we watched as sort of companies like Kana really had to figure out how to survive through that. And so I often referred to this notion of Strava was both how do we go back to this concept we had around fitness and health, but also in some ways for Michael and I, Strava was how to finish what we started. We had hoped that Kana was something that we could keep building for years. And, you know, circumstances were such that it, it remained a public company for a number of years. It just wasn't ours anymore. Mm. We'd given up the reins and moved on. So Strava was a chance for us to go and recreate a company. But, you know, we'd like to think Strava has some lasting power.
What was the original intent? Because you targeted cyclists at the beginning, is that right? And not runners, as maybe some people might expect.
What people don't often appreciate is there's sometimes a difference between vision and go-to-market strategy. What had happened is that we started to look at the marketplace. We saw lots of different sort of running apps and, you know, Nike had something out in the marketplace and there were some new apps that had hit the smartphones and so forth. But when we actually looked at where a lot of people were collecting data that we thought we might be useful in terms of creating services, it was in the cycling community. They had Garmin devices sitting on their handlebars. They were putting power meters onto their bikes themselves. They were spending a lot of money to sort of enhance their sport. And nobody was addressing their needs.
Yeah.
So, you know, a little known fact about Strava, we were a web company when we first started. There was no mobile app or anything like that. But it was a great place for us to be very authentic with a specific customer, with the intent being if we could get that right, we could then roll out across other sports and other categories, which, you know, if we look 10 years later now, 31 different activities that you can do on Strava. So the vision has come true, but it just took us a little while.
And was it always about the data gathering? Was that it? Sort of you plug in your Garmin device and you can see what your workout looks like. You can set out your training plan. Was that sort of the original intent for people that are serious about a sport, let's say?
I think the intent, it's remained the same, and it's a really simple thesis, which is Michael and I realized that when we were on this team, we needed something that kept us motivated. It's all about motivation, inspiration. I often joke, it's about just keeping it fun. And that's what it was when we were on that crew team, and it's what we wanted to create with Strava. So rather than being about the data is a means to an end. The end result was, how do we inspire both ourselves as customers of Strava, as well as whoever wants to join us in Strava? How do we inspire you to go out and be a little more active than you were the day before? That's really been the mission, and it's remained the mission. We talk today about how to help people achieve their personal best. It always comes back to, are we keeping folks motivated? The data is a great way to help us do that. Since we're a software company, since Michael and I were software entrepreneurs, it was much easier for us to envision using software as our platform to motivate folks than it would have been for us to, you know, invent a new pair of shoes or a fancier bike helmet.
And I've heard you say it's a lot today about community, about building community. And it's really done wonders in that sense of bringing people together that might not know each other, or to finding a group to go ride with or something like that. That's obviously a big part of the mission now.
It is. I caution folks. I talk to entrepreneurs all the time when they ask, you know, you've got this great community. How do we do this? So quick history. When we launched Strava, the intent was, hey, let's treat Strava as though it's just as an important piece of gear, again, as someone's bicycle or someone's pair of running shoes. How would we create something that has that kind of value? And let's also remember that we're going to start with one customer. To this day, I know who that customer was. I remember our first paying customer. It's a gentleman, David. He lives on the West Coast. We needed to make sure that our product, our service coming from Strava, could motivate him. So there was no community discussion in the early days of Strava. It was, how do we build product that motivates and inspires? Now, what happened over the course of the next few years was, as we developed additional features and services, you could see that a lot of motivation came from that team concept, a little bit of what I talked about with the rowing. So how do we marry those two together? And so for someone who's familiar with Strava, the advent of leaderboards and segments and being able to look at matched runs, things like that, these are all the tools that we use to bring authenticity to the community, to basically bring the community together in a natural way. It's the other thing that we've come to learn is that we really didn't build a community. It already existed. There's a community of athletes that are out there. We just gave them a new forum where they could share and compete and, again, trash talk and high-five each other when they're online.
And what about the flip side of that? Because obviously we talk about social media and how that can, in some senses, be a negative impact in our life. But I imagine people ask you about whether Strava forces you to go a little bit hard or compare yourself to other people constantly on this platform, where it's really meant to be about, you know, encouraging each other or encouraging yourself, I guess.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you read the headlines today. You don't have to go very far to just see sort of the negative impact of social media across a variety of sectors and issues. We feel good. I'll tell you why. There's a couple pieces of data that I'll share with you. One, there's an interesting stat that we look at a lot inside Strava, which is the ratio between how frequently you work out and the time that you spend in our app. And right now, it's about a 50-to-1 ratio. So for every minute that you're spending in Strava on the app, you're spending at least 50 minutes out working out. That's a good sign. You know, we want this to be something where you hit start, you put it in your pocket, and go and enjoy, you know, go and enjoy that workout. Another great one, we had a third party, actually it was a university right here in the UK that did a study of Strava athletes to understand sort of the impact of Strava on happiness. And the good news was, at least here in the UK, you know, 69% said that their happiness was increased by simply being involved in a community that really is supportive. So you're right, there are competitions on Strava, there's challenges, there's leaderboards. The vast majority of us are not at the top of the leaderboard. We learned that very quickly. It's the professionals that they get to hold those ranks. But you can see your own improvement. You can see sort of how you're trending. You can have fun cheering on your friends. In my case, I find that I get far more kudos and celebratory notes from people for posting a great photo from an early morning run than I do any kind of performance.
I wonder about how you see the sort of the widespread traction you've got across the spectrum of athletes, from amateurs to professionals as well. You've got Greg Van Avermaet, I think, put his gold medal performance on the bike up there. You've got people that are summiting Everest that have logged that on Strava. There's incredible things, but also just everyday runners that are using the platform all the time.
Yeah, our thesis was as follows. If we can't build this for the most demanding athletes in the world, we're going to have a problem. We looked at a lot of other great brands that support athletes and realize you really do need to meet the needs of everybody in that community. And so we wanted to build something that, if you're a professional or you're going after an Olympic gold medal, you'll find value in Strava. But make no mistake, the vast majority of people who participate in Strava are not going for gold medals. They're not climbing Everest tomorrow. They're trying to just get that 5K run in, you know, after work before they have 10 other obligations. Our mission is really to make sure that this can be a community that serves all those folks effectively. So you can find your tribe on Strava. And we're going to continue to do that. We love this notion of being aspirational. So we'll champion the professional cyclist, or, you know, we've got 2/3 of the Tour de France that will upload their each of their stages on Strava. It's a great community, and they can be aspirational, but folks are more like me. Candidly, they're lucky if they get out and put in that 5-mile run before work and, you know, grab a couple of kudos. But even if I don't hear from anybody, I'm just happy that I did it and on to the next day.
I wonder about how you react to the clients. Some of them are paying customers and people that are using the platform, and we said across the spectrums of different levels of athletes, but people take such ownership of these things when they become part of their routine. So when you make changes on the website, how people react to that, and how you work with customers in that sense to both improve or you know, change the outlook of the app?
It's a great question. We could spend hours on both the lessons, hard lessons learned, mistakes that have been made along the way. I hope that our community would see Strava as being somebody who, we're their champion. We know who our customer is, and we're there to serve them. Doesn't mean we don't make mistakes. I was just earlier today, we were discussing our feed. So our feed is sort of it's kind of the primary homepage when someone comes onto Strava, and they can see not only their own activities, but they can see all of their friends' activities and so forth that are posting. And, you know, a number of years ago, we changed the way in which we present the feed. It used to be just chronological, and we went to what's called an algorithmic feed. In essence, we began to put some intelligence behind it. And the theory was that we were hearing from a lot of customers that they were missing important things that their friends were doing. You know, someone goes and swims the English Channel, but it happened, you know, 24 hours before they looked at their feed. They may not see it because everybody's morning run commute to work shows up at the top. So we simply designed a way in which that extraordinary activity would surface. It would still be from your friends. It wasn't for promotional purposes, but it was just to make sure that you were seeing things that might be interesting. That did not go over well. Right? You know, that's a good example of, you know, it's like you changed a fundamental piece of the way Strava operates. And chronology is important when it comes to working out. And I just want to know what's the most recent thing that came in. And it was a great conversation that we continue to have. There are members who probably are still frustrated with the way that operates. We are committed to the feed that we're doing, and it will get better with every passing day. You know, we've got great engineers and developers and designers who think through this. But what I've found is that if we can just have an open conversation and people understand why it is that we're trying to do something, we're fine.
What about the data piece of this? Obviously, for your neighbors in Silicon Valley and the other big social media companies, data is money. That's so important to them. But on Strava, we are willingly putting in our data and giving it. But what does that mean to Strava? Obviously, there's questions, and people, I assume, ask you about privacy and those concerns. But I think you have a completely different outlook on what data means on your platform.
We do. In part, I think it's because we know who our, again, coming back to our who our customer is, right? If we were purely advertising-based business, we'd be having a very different conversation, because we would try to be understanding, well, our users are on the platform and they have to understand that there's a way in which we have to make money, and so we're going to use the data to help profile their information. We don't have to do that at Strava. As you mentioned earlier, we have a percentage of our members and they pay a subscription, and that's the vast majority of our revenue today. So our revenue model alone allows us to have, again, a very transparent relationship. That being said, what's really exciting about the data, if you think about Strava's history, the first 8 years it took us just to get to our first 1 billion activities, which sounds like a lot, but you need to get up to that level of activity before you can really do interesting things with it. Now, in the next 18 months, we saw our second 1 billion. So in short order, and we'll see our next 1 billion in less than a year. So the flywheel is spinning it such that we're now seeing enough information that gets us really excited about what the future looks like for new services for our athletes. Simple example would be the ability to discover new things. So you should be able to open up the Strava app. For instance, when I landed here at Heathrow Airport, or I got to the hotel in London, I should be able to open up the Strava app in the future. It recognizes me. It knows what kinds of runs I like to do, but it can now suggest whether it's a route or it's a running club, something that's relevant to me in this new area that I've never been to. That's available to us because of the data that we now have inside Strava. Because of the relationship we have with our customers, we can take advantage of it that way.
I wonder if the vision now, the trajectory is to be more involved with a lot of these companies that are making hardware and are, you know, really on the forefront of GPS and the next stages of that, or if it's in Strava building its own capabilities to be able to do these things and offer the services, as you just mentioned.
I think that when it comes to much of the hardware that we've been successful partnering with, it's we recognize when it comes to capturing information about the performance, whether that's, you know, a watch on your wrist, or it's a chest monitor of some kind for your heart rate, whatever it is that captures information on your activity, we stay out of that business. We are Switzerland. We love the innovation that's taking place on the hardware side of things. I think we partner with today, it's somewhere between 300-400 different fitness device manufacturers, and we'll stay out of that. We realize both the innovation they can do, the type of business that they're in, we're best served at being their partner and thinking about our software. And I think in some respects, it leads then to your other question, which is because we're clear on what that relationship looks like, we're now in a place where we can contribute back to them. So case in point would be something like our partnership with Garmin, where they're taking Strava information, Strava data, and bringing them back out onto their devices when someone's working out. So you might want to chase a live segment, or you may want the route, you know, the map that comes from Strava. These are things that we can provide. And because we understand what that relationship looks like, it's an easy marriage or partnership.
The other partnership that is huge on the platform is the challenges, and you've already mentioned that. I wonder if we could unpack that a little bit, because those are so interesting, I think, both as a, you know, a value add or even retail possibilities or brand growth possibilities, because brands can come in and partner with Strava and say, okay, I run, you sign up and you run 75 miles this month and you can get a discount on this, or you can unlock this certain thing. How important is that, and where did that sort of come into the story of Strava?
The history there, challenges are a great way to, again, motivate and inspire. You know, for some folks, it's really fun. And some of these challenges are very simple. You know, run a 10K sometime over the next week, or, you know, how many miles can you put in a given month? And so those have been with Strava historically, just things that we offered up to our athletes. What you're referring to is we then began to partner with many of the brands to think about creative ways in which we could motivate our athletes beyond just how far can you run. And you're right, sometimes it's motivation around if you complete XYZ goal, then there's a gift certificate, or there's money to be spent at with one of our brand partners. In some, they've gotten far more creative. There was a wonderful one that we did here with New Balance during the London Marathon, or in lead up to the London Marathon, where they actually built a physical pub in downtown London by accumulating miles. You use Strava miles to purchase your pint.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are the kinds of creative things when both ourselves and the brands work together to think about ways in which we can motivate our athletes. Really fun stuff comes to the surface.
Do you guys position yourself as a technology company these days? Because there's, I mean, if we look at growth and things, like, the trajectory has been incredible, as you've already mentioned, in the past 18 months. I think you've as well brought on a new CEO to the company, which has changed things up. But do you, at the heart of it, see yourself growing in the traditional sense of a tech company? Is that how you see it?
Going back to something I said earlier, you know, Michael and I have, we're really excited about what we can build over the long term with Strava. And frankly, what gets us motivated almost on a selfish level is when we sat down before Strava and started to list the companies that we admired most out there, they weren't Silicon Valley-based companies. They were not the traditional technology companies. They tended to be consumer brands that we had known since we were kids, right? Whether it was a Nike, or it was an Oakley, or a Patagonia, or, you know, here in the UK, like Virgin, you know, these were the kinds of names that he and I kept talking about, that, boy, if we could go build anything, what would it look like? And that's one of our dreams. That was something that we said, hey, we've never done it before, but wouldn't that be cool? So for us, Strava is, to say it's a technology company, it's true in the sense that our fundamental business is, and our strength is in building software. That's how we are serving the athletes. I love to refer to ourselves as we're an athlete company. We know who our customer is. That will always be our customer. We believe anybody who sweats is an athlete. If you're willing to put forth some effort, trust me, you're an athlete. Mm-hmm. And that's who we want to serve. And if we do that right, I'd love to think that this company is around long after I've decided to move on. That's our dream, and we'll see if we can pull it off.
You've been in the startup game for a number of years now, a few decades, but I've heard you say that it was the founder of Oakley who is one of your mentors and early inspirations in growing a company. And do you think you've lived up to some of the advice that he was able to offer early days?
His advice probably hits my brain at least every other day. guy named Jim Gennard. He probably doesn't even remember me, but I was fortunate enough to meet him in 1994. He named his company after his dog. So when people ask, why did I name Kana Kana? I named it because Jim Gennard had done it with Oakley and it worked well for him. So that was what we were going to do. And I think back to, you know, so much of what he talked about, just, I mean, he was so disciplined when it came to understanding who his customer was and who they weren't and his willingness to not sacrifice for that. And I think we're still in that place. You know, ultimately, we want to serve as many people as want to join the community. But, you know, just knowing who we are and who we aren't is an important thing today. And so there's little things like that that pop up every day. So, yeah, I admire him greatly.
I've heard you talk about this thing called the three P's, I think. Patience, persistence, perspective. You used to include perfection, but you got rid of that. Talk me through that and what that means for you as a business founder.
So that phrase came up during my Kana years, and I've used it ever since. And you're right. It used to be patience, persistence, and perfection. We learned that it was just wrong. I was young, and I thought that, you know, this idea of sort of going after the best we could possibly be was around perfection. And we changed it. I changed it because I realized that perspective was more important, that, you know, you're going to have these roller coasters. As entrepreneurs, you're going to ride the roller coaster, and you kind of need to bring some perspective to it so that you don't let that roller coaster eat you up. And then when it came to perfection, we've actually changed it. At Strava, we use a very different word. We use the concept of craftsmanship. Because craftsmanship is a mindset. If we're going to go do something, let's go do it well. If we're going to go build software for athletes, let's do it well. Let's be the best we can be. But let's realize we're never going to achieve perfection. That's the holy grail that may always be out there in the future. But if we're craftsmen or we're craftsmen-like, that's a good way to approach it.
I'm just curious about the company today. And I already mentioned you've brought in another CEO. But what about the journey for you and Michael? How are you enjoying that? And as the company, I imagine, is growing quite rapidly, as are the users and data that's going into the website. But what's it like today? What's it like to work at Strava?
It's an incredible place. I'm really fortunate. Quickly, we've got about 200 folks in the company today. We're headquartered in San Francisco, but we actually have offices now around the world. We've got offices in the UK, Brazil, France, Germany, Japan. We're still highly engaged. James, who you've mentioned, James Quarles, who's the CEO, he's been in the seat now for 2 years, done a fantastic job. I am sure there are days when the two founders drive him nuts. We're not going anywhere. We're incredibly passionate about the success of this business, but we also know our role. We also know that, you know, I don't have direct reports. I'm serving as chairman of the company, and I'm not in the daily affairs of the business. And, you know, I think we've found a good rhythm. Mm-hmm. We understand sort of the roles that we should be playing and let the team go do what they do, because they do it really well.
I'm curious about your day-to-day then and how you help sort of steer the ship, but to make sure you're not stepping on anyone's toes but still enjoying the ride. How's that for you?
So full disclosure, there are days when it's harder and there's days when it's easier. But the easier is way more important. You know, I'm a single dad. I've got two boys that I still have 1 year left with them. They just finished their junior year in high school, so they're one more year before they're off to college, and that's been important to me. And so to have the freedom to be available to them and be a part of their lives in a really significant way, easy sacrifice. That was an easy decision that allows me then the freedom to be engaged in the things that James deems are important. So there's board activities. There's always board things that we're trying to do to help with the leadership of the business. There's recruiting that takes place as James is trying to build the team. I'm involved in that as he deems necessary or would like me. And there's just opportunity to be out with the community, which is a good way for me to get feedback and bring it back in. So those would be key areas that I'm getting involved with. But it really is, it's a little bit of all hands on deck. You know, whatever they need from me, then that's what I try to do.
That's all the time we have on today's show. A huge thank you to Mark Ganey for coming in to share the story of Strava. My kudos this week to our researcher, Rory Gooderick, and to my studio manager, Kieran Matthew Banerjee. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.